National News.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the May 25th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. We've reached the quarterfinal stage at the inaugural Basketball Africa League tournament in Kigali, Rwanda. The league features 12 of Africa's top professional clubs, and it's backed by both the NBA, the National Basketball Association, and FIBA, the International Basketball Federation. VOA, the Voice of America, is a proud broadcasting partner of the Basketball Africa League, or BAL. The Voice of America has been broadcasting the BAL games in the following languages: English, French, Bambara, Kinyarwanda, Wolof, and Portuguese.
Voice of America!
Let's take a look at the quarterfinal matchups at the Kigali Arena. On Wednesday, FAP of Cameroon will play Zamalek of Egypt, and that will be followed by a game between AS Salé of Morocco and Petro de Luanda of Angola. On Thursday, AS Douanes of Senegal will go against U.S. Monastir of Tunisia, and that will be followed by a game between the home team, the Kigali-based Patriots of Rwanda, and Ferroviario de Maputo of Mozambique. Going into the knockout rounds, the North African teams Monastir and Zamalek are seeded first and second, respectively, and Angola's Petro de Luanda is seeded third. All three teams were unbeaten in group play. Czech Tierro has been providing analysis for us during the VOA's special English radio broadcasts of the Basketball Africa League. Czech is a former professional basketball player from Mali who works for the VOA's French to Africa service. And Czech contacted Basketball Africa League president Amadou Gallo Fall for his thoughts on the tournament. Here's Czech.
Is it, what do you expect from NBA to organize a historical moment in Africa right now, which is taking place in Kigali?
For sure. First of all, thank you. But also, I want to congratulate you because we're proud of what you're doing. And as we talk about the Basketball Africa League, we want to build a basketball industry. We can see this league becoming, a place where not only the players playing on the court and the coaches can become professional, but also someone like you went to Basketball Without Borders, now working in broadcasting. We need broadcasters to, tell the story, around the world. And we are, in terms of coming back to our thoughts around this first week of games, first of all, really the footprint in terms of these games being distributed in 215 countries and 15 languages all across Africa and around the world is a big first step, so it's about really creating a compelling product on the court. And very, impressed with a lot of these teams, that coming out of the gate, first of all, the talent they have in their teams, and also the discipline and, the level of expertise that I see from the sidelines, from different coaches, from different backgrounds. So I think, it's a good step, good few days of games, and I can only, see this getting better and more difficult as we move to the playoffs. So it's been a long time coming as we were set to start in March 2020, and now have to wait all this time. But we used that time to really stay engaged and connected with our teams. We did a lot of work in terms of referee training and building capacity with our teams through some leadership series where we had some of the best basketball minds in the NBA come and exchange with our BAL team, from Coach Popovich to Glenn Casey, Steve Kerr, and other general managers in the league who came and, just share their experience, talk about how they build culture in the organization, the winning organization that they lead today. And we have very ambitious goals with our league. So this is why, for me, this has been a great start. But we're going to continue to work and to put forth the effort to make sure that this league in a few years is going to be one of the absolute best professional basketball league in the world.
Oh, we saw that a lot of Africans have been very shining in NBA. We see a good significant numbers of African players in NBA, and the list going on. I'm pretty sure you are aware of a lot of them, most of them pretty much. And we have so seen that one of the best player, African players right now, did basketball without a border with you, Joel Embiid, which is one of the top center in the United States, a good friend of mine. And also seen that a lot of players in college and high school level that have been inspired by your passion toward this game. We saw the Nigerian teams really have one of the only players in the league, Africa Basketball League this year, to experience playing against teams in the NBA. Do we expect to see on the recruiting side better recruitment for Nigerian team? Because we saw the NBA draft 2020 to top Africans to make it to NBA first round. And the first time in history, six of them was from Nigeria originally. And do you expect to see any change from this team so far from the tournament? Because it's the first time teams trying to figure it out how to come up with a better. Do you think we're going to see any change in the future from teams that have done tremendous good and teams that have done poorly?
Yeah, look, I think it's a start. So obviously, even all of us as a league, we're going to have a lot of learnings, because there will be so many firsts, in this inaugural season. So, it's going to be a learning experience on a lot of level. But as far as just the talent, I think the talent can only improve. I mean, I'm again largely satisfied from most of what I've seen. Obviously, there's room for improvement always. As far as Nigeria, I'm not worried, because even outside of those players you talk about that are in the U.S., really flying the flag, the Nigerian flag and the African flag very high, in Nigeria alone, there is enough talent to really, see an incredible local competition. Mm-hmm. They have to get the
right
local championships going. And I think this team, as you see, that they are, they're just lacking in competition, because I understand that there hasn't been like a formal local league in like a couple of years for different reasons. But I'm pretty sure they will overcome that and for next season come back with a representative that is going to be among the best, because Nigeria is ranked in terms of international competition from a national team perspective number one both in men and women. So that needs to translate when it comes to club level. You see Tunisia, and Angola, when you look at US Monastir, you look at Petro, you look at SAP, even IS Guan, IS Talib, most of those players play in the domestic league, and they recruited, a few players who are either from the US or other parts. I know that Monastir has a player from Lebanon who is probably the best one guard in Asia, that they were able to attract. So the opportunity here is for the league to retain elite talent from the continent, develop elite talent from the continent, but attract also elite talent from all around the world. So this is why we are excited about the opportunity here to build one of the best professional basketball leagues in the world in years to come.
Well, you mentioned the local, and this is going to give the local players a lot of chance to also prove their talent to the world, because the world will see Africa talent through this BAL tournament. Do we expect to see anything, any surprising recruitment from the NBA toward this league in Africa?
Ultimately, we are looking to grow a basketball industry right here and on the continent. We always know that there was tremendous talent here, and the talent has always been exported. And now we want to make sure that that talent also gets to be showcased on the continent. What was lacking is a platform, and like the Basketball Africa League. Now that it is here, I think the trickle down effect is going to be much improved local leagues, because you have to win your national league to qualify for the Basketball Africa League. So I already start seeing that in many countries where clubs are recruiting talent, are getting some locals who are playing in other leagues around the world, who just finished university in the U.S., going back home to play in their local league, because for the chance to qualify for the Basketball Africa League, which is a Champions League model. So, you know, I can see improved quality in terms of the local leagues, and this is how you're going to grow the entire ecosystem, because we will run our season, let's say, around 3 months, but then the rest of the time, you want these local leagues to prosper. You want more talent from Africa to have opportunity to monetize their talent right here in Africa, and that's how you're going to build an industry. And it's only going to add to really also the strength of basketball around the world as the number two sport.
Thank you so much, Galo. Amadou, thank you very much. You are Africa proud right now. We all really are shining under the light of the work you have done so for so many young talents from Africa playing basketball. And we'll be in touch and follow up. It's a great pleasure for VOA to broadcast with you.
Broadcasting on the Voice of America, that's Chek Tierro of the VOA's French to Africa service. Chek is a former professional basketball player from Mali, and he was talking with Amadou Galo Fall, the president of the Basketball Africa League.
My name is Elizabeth Okumu, assistant captain and player, University of Nairobi Dynamite basketball team, and currently a player of Lioness, the Kenya national team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Aru Ramadan Chan recently made history when he was named South Sudan's first ever FIBA commissioner for basketball. Prince Nesta asked Aru about his FIBA job, the BAL tournament in Kigali, and his basketball background.
I am currently the FIBA commissioner for South Sudan Basketball Federation. First one ever for our country, our young country. Aru Ramadan is a former basketball player. I played basketball at different levels. So I played basketball in college. I played in USIU for 6 years. That was in the Premier League, in Kenyan Premier League. And then after I finished USIU, I moved to Uganda, where I joined City Oil, City Oilers. I played with them 2 seasons in Uganda. And we won 2 championships those 2 seasons in Uganda, top flight, Ugandan Premier League. And then I went back to Kenya, where I joined the Kenya Port Authority. And I played with them 4 seasons, where I won with them 3 championships in Kenya. And then I thought high time now to go back home, and that's when I decided now to come back to South Sudan to help build the basketball culture in South Sudan. And that's where I am right now, and we are doing our level best to bring basketball up to speed in Africa.
Tell me a little bit about your FIBA basketball gig. What does it entail?
In a nutshell, the work of a basketball commissioner is in charge of officiating the game from outside. You know, I oversee the game from the time before it starts to the actual 40 minutes stopping plus 30 minutes after the game. So I am an overseer of the game. That is on court. Now, off court, here back at home, I'll be running clinics to bring our referees up to speed, you know, because once the referees are up to speed, the game will develop. So that is my mandate right now. That is what I'll be doing.
How long have you been on the job for?
I have been on the job now for less than 2 months since I passed my FIBA examinations. It's been 2 months now.
And how has it been so far, considering South Sudan is a young country and there's a lot that still needs to be done?
There's a lot of work needs to be done. A lot of work needs to be done. There's a lot of challenges in South Sudan, you know, from all aspects. But I'm up for the challenge because it's my passion. I want to see the game grow. And our chairman is doing a wonderful job so far with the national team. So now we need to bring whatever that is happening at the African level, we have to bring it back home, you know, to the grassroots. You know, it's not easy, but as a team, I have a good team working with me, the Secretary General. We're all working together, and I am more than positive that we are going to get good results within a short time.
FIBA and NBA Africa have actually come together to, you know, develop the Basketball African League tournament that is taking place in Kigali, Rwanda. Tell me a little bit about the tournament. Are you contented with what you're seeing so far?
The tournament is amazing. It is a good initiative. It is exposing our African talents to the world. Our boys now have the confidence and have the morale that most of them did not have before. Whatever Ball is doing in Africa is amazing, and we really appreciate, and it's just the beginning. My wish was if Corona was not there, I know how Kigali Arena, 20,000+ people would be filled up with all fans from all around Africa. That was that's something that was going to happen. But unfortunately, we're going to work with what we have so far, and so far so good. It's positive. It's been received worldwide positively.
What do you think this means for the African continent? The tournament being held in Africa, and of course, as far as exposing African players is concerned, what does the tournament mean for the African continent?
The tournament means a lot to Africa, you know. And in a nutshell, for African players, they now have a platform where they can showcase their talents. And I am very sure within a very short time, you're going to see a lot of African players playing in the NBA very soon, because they are now being exposed and they are being seen, you know, by scouts all over the world. And it's a positive thing for Africa as a continent.
So far, what are the standout performances in the tournament so far for you? Being an experienced basketballer yourself, which are some of the names that you think maybe could actually get to the NBA if they have really performed well in the tournament?
We'll get to know now the cream de la cream when we approach the semifinals and the finals, where now everybody has settled in and so everybody's confident. The butterflies are all out. You know, so we are keeping a closer look at them. So as team now meet each other, and they get to punch each other left, right, as they do, as they spar, we'll get to know who is who as the group stage is clear. And then we go to the knockout stages.
You went to school in Kenya, grew up in Kenya. You know, you're from South Sudan. What's happening to South Sudanese teams and Kenyan teams? How come they're not taking part in these competitions?
Yeah, you know, as you know, that there are fewer slots, you know, and the competition is very stiff, deservedly so. I want to believe that next time or next year, the East African teams are going to step up. The East African clubs, you know, this time around, people are concentrating more on the national team. But from what I see now, everybody's hungry, especially those guys that didn't make it. And they know that if they would have worked a little bit harder, they would have made it. They are hungry than before. They are hungrier. And I know that comes next season, we are going to see a lot of East African teams representing Kenya, Uganda, Burundi, perhaps, because we see Rwanda, the Patriots are representing as well. So it was just a lack of adequate preparation in advance. But I'm very sure they're going to catch up.
Taking part in this tournament, American players, foreign-based players, do you think so far that blend is working out between, you know, these foreign-based players and African players?
Oh yes, it is working out, and we encourage it, you know, because when the foreign best players come and they play alongside the local players in the region, the local players get to learn a lot of things from them, you know, be it on court or off court, both they get to learn a lot. And when they go, the players that are left behind here will have stepped up to what they have seen. So, you know, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. We have no problem with it, and we really encourage it.
J. Cole has been, you know, playing for the Patriots of Rwanda. Do you think his performance so far has been something worth mentioning?
J. Cole is doing his thing. He's doing his thing. He's doing what he can do for his team, Patriots, and he's representing well. And I know probably he has not stepped up to his full potential, perhaps because of the butterflies that I talked about. But I am very sure as the tournament progresses, as Patriots go further, he's going to come out of his shelf, and he's going to play better than he is. He's playing good, but I know he can do better.
What next for South Sudan basketball, and what next for African basketball after this tournament especially?
What next for basketball in South Sudan is that now we have to go now all the way to the grassroots and tap the untapped talent, because South Sudan has a lot of talent. That is very untapped, you know, and we build academies and we step up our game, you know, so that we can have continuity when these old bananas go away. Okay, so same for Africa generally, you know. Now, given that now everybody is watching their cousins, their countrymen participating in this ball, the young ones are going to be motivated, you know. They want to play alongside the likes of J. Cole. They want to play the biggest stage in Africa could ever present to them. And they're going to be motivated, and they're going to step up, you know. Likewise, every country should go to the grassroots and look for their young talents and tap them for the next 10 years. We are going to have great competition in this tournament, and a lot of African players are going to be exported outside.
That's Aru Ramadan Chan, South Sudan's first ever FIBA commissioner for basketball. And he spoke with Prince Nesta from South Sudan.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
In National Basketball Association playoff action Monday night, the Milwaukee Bucks thrashed the Miami Heat by 34 points to take a 2-0 lead in their first round series. The AP's Tom Merriam reports.
The Milwaukee Bucks have now won the first 2 games of their opening round series against Miami by blowing out the Heat 132-98. The game was a stark contrast to Game 1 when the Bucks won on a last-second shot in overtime. In this one, Milwaukee jumped out to a massive 46-20 lead after the first quarter. Miami never got closer than 19 the rest of the way. Giannis Antetokounmpo led the onslaught with 31 points.
I think the team just, you know, we're locked in. We're playing great offensively, moving the ball. But at the end of the day, we didn't let our foot off the gas defensively, so we're in a good space.
Jrue Holiday dished out 15 assists.
I just think locking in. Every time out, you had Giannis saying, don't let the foot off the gas. You had Coach preaching it to us. So at that point, you know, we just felt like we had to lock in, and we know what type of team Miami is, where they play hard for 48 minutes.
The Bucks dominated the Heat on the boards 61-36. I'm Tom Merriam.
Thanks, Tom. Bam Adebayo scored 16 points for Miami, and Bam sounded pretty demoralized after the lopsided loss.
Definitely didn't expect to be down 2-0 in the playoffs. So, you know, it's a lot of emotions going on, but at the end of the day, we all men, you know, and we can figure this out.
Bam Adebayo will try to figure things out in a playoff series that has a heavy Nigerian influence. Bam is one of 9 players who were either born in Nigeria or have at least one parent who was. The NBA says this may be the largest number of players of Nigerian heritage to appear in the same series. In more playoff action, the Denver Nuggets beat the visiting Portland Trail Blazers to even that first round series at 1 game each. The AP's Bruce Morton reports.
The Nuggets overcame a 42-point effort from Damian Lillard en route to a 128-109 victory. The series now stands at a game apiece. Nikola Jokic led the way for Denver with 38.
The dog who barks doesn't bite, so I mean, we just need to go out there and fight, you know. So that was the feeling on the court, you know. We never gave up.
Game 3 is in Portland on Thursday. I'm Bruce Morton.
Thanks, Bruce. Surfing is one of the sports that will be making its Olympic debut in Tokyo. But some athletes have expressed concern that the smaller waves in Japan will fail to reach the heights of Olympic competition. VOA's Gwen Uten explains. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Surfing's long-awaited Olympic debut will showcase world champions, veterans of the World Surf League, and rookie pros who are poised to make their mark on the sport. The athletes deal with a wide range of conditions in oceans across the globe, but at Tsurugazaki Beach, the surfing venue for the Tokyo Games, waves are typically smaller during the summer months, and that has raised some concerns among competitors like surfer Gabriel Medina. In 2014, Medina made history by becoming the first Brazilian surfing world champion, and he tells Reuters News, waves that are too short and lacking in power could make the Olympic competition a little bit tricky.
The whole world is going to be watching us. It's pretty big for this sport. And it's going to be a tricky one, you know, because the waves in Japan, it's kind of hard, you know, like small and funky. So if you want to be the best, you got to do everything in any condition.
One piece of technology that has been making waves in recent years is the artificial surf pool that can create almost identical and perfect waves on demand. And the anticipated lackluster surf in Japan has many wondering if Olympic organizers should trade the natural beach for artificial technology. Australian Stephanie Gilmore is a 7 times world champion and the most decorated female surfer in the sport. Gilmore likes the idea of a surf pool that she says will give competitors an equal opportunity to ride the best waves.
Not everyone gets an equal chance in the ocean, so a wave pool made sense that we get the same opportunity as each other, and it comes down to your performance on the wave, and that's it.
20 male and 20 female athletes will compete in 3 rounds and 3 finals at the upcoming games. They will be judged on levels of type and difficulty, including big turns and aerials, for a score between 0 and 10. Wave technology didn't exist back in 2015 when the sport was invited to apply for the Tokyo Games. International Surfing Association President Fernando Aguirre says at that time he was told the competition must be held in the ocean, but he was assured that the location will give surfers the right amount of swell for the optimal ride.
The place is known for being exposed to the right swells at this time of the year. It's a very consistent. It has hosted international competitions, Japanese national championships. So we were very confident. Besides that, as we approach, let's say, the week before the game start, we have a meteorologist and surf forecaster, both from Japan and from the U.S. that we've been working with for many years. And we have, because of the conditions in Japan, within 72 hours or 72 hours before a certain day, we know exactly how the surf is coming.
Like Stephanie Gilmore, world champion surfer Sally Fitzgibbons also hails from Australia, a continent that boasts some of the best surfing beaches in the world. But Fitzgibbons said she's had to adjust her style on much smaller waves ahead of her trip to Tokyo.
Oh, the Olympics, I think, will all be about, like, atmosphere and obviously very technical surfing in small waves. I've been, you know, working really hard on it and really pride myself with my small wave surfing. That's where kind of my origins lie. So, hopefully I can bring out what I've been training for and, yeah, bring out the big maneuvers.
And despite her initial desire to compete in a wave pool, Stephanie Gilmore says nothing beats the magic of the ocean.
It has beautiful beaches and they really want to show surfing in its most authentic form. So once I thought about it that way, I was like, yeah, no, I like the idea of having surfing in the ocean.
The sport of surfing is set to make its Olympic debut in a matter of weeks on July 25th. And then get ready for the 2024 Paris Games when the surfing competition will return on the French island of Tahiti. And that is all from me, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the May 25th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.